It's time for another episode of Just a Bit Outside with your hosts, Stark and Massaro.
Way back, Blue Jays win it! Touch the ball, Joe! Brett Favre! Touchdown, Green Bay! Bless you, boys! What a game!
We are live. Welcome to Just a Bit Outside with Stark and Massaro. I am your host, Ian Starkman, and I am joined by my co-host, Mike Massaro. Lots of great sports that we will touch on today, including OT with the Titans and Colts. No more undefeated NFL teams. The Battle of Michigan does not disappoint. The World Series, and I let you know how I am feeling about the Maple Leafs this week. But first, Mike, how was your sports week?
Stark, I'm feeling a lot better today than I was probably at this point last week. I developed a cold thanks to my niece's birthday party from the previous weekend. Nice little doggy bag for the family. Gets everyone a cold. So, I got over that and, pretty much laid low most of the week. I was able to catch some of the pre-Olympic trial curling. So I think we touched on that in the, we're curling fans, so we may.
Yes, love the rock.
Yeah, may sprinkle some of that in next month for the Olympic qualifiers, but they had the pre-trials and TSN carried, I believe it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the playoff portion. So one of the teams I've been following for years on the women's side, they got in the first qualifier. So
which is
Team McCarville.
They're Team based McCarver. Out of, okay,
yeah, McCarville. They're based out of Northern Ontario, so they're as somewhat of a disadvantage. They don't play in many tournaments throughout the course of the year, given the proximity of Thunder Bay where they're located. But they always do well in the Scotties, and I've shared a lot of conversations with my good buddy Mr. Vic Router about the Scotties and the Briars over the years. So it was nice to see curling on TV again.
The Scotties and the Briar is one of the Canadian staples of sports. And it's great tournaments. I mean, the thought of having a representative of every province come in for a Bonspiel, you play everyone, you get a record, then you move on. You got the page system for the playoffs. It's a cool way of doing a tournament of any sport. So for any of you out there that don't know about curling or you're not Canadian and you wouldn't know about these two tournaments, look into them. They're actually awesome to follow week long, and that's how we crown our Canadian champion. I think it's awesome. Imagine in the States if they had a tournament where there was one person from every state or one team from every state and they came together. I think it's a real cool concept.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, begs the question, how did the Mighty Ducks get picked for the Junior Goodwill Games, from Minnesota? Great question.
Yeah.
But no, it was good. And, to your point, I think TSN, not to toot their horn, not that they need it, but I think they always do an exceptional job with the curling coverage, and Vic is the best. So that was fun. And then Sunday, it was, a pretty easy Sunday. I didn't have to put my banner up, my flag outside. Packers weren't playing. So it was just, okay, who am I going to waste my money on? And I did again. So
it was not only a bye week for the players, it was a bye week for the fans as well, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, I kind of felt that way. Kind of like, look, I still committed the day to football as much as I could, but in the morning got the garage patio furniture put away and all that stuff. So, just weird NFL Sunday without your team playing. It doesn't feel the same.
Yeah. Well, it was a full-blown sports week here at the Starkman household. We had hockey practices and games for both boys. And then on Sunday, we actually combined for 3 goals between the two boys. A lot to cheer about here. Videos being passed around to the grandparents and all the family members to show them the boys' goals and their different odd celebrations that these kids do nowadays. But it was pretty cool to see. They were really jacked up about it, especially going into the Halloween night. Saturday, though, was a big sports day. For me, big sports watching day, I should say. I had my brother-in-law over. Shout out to Justin, big fan of the pod. But we just watched sports. Once I got home from the rink with the kids, him and his sister, who is my wife, they made a great dinner, you know, steak, potatoes, everything going good. I was in charge of opening the beer bottles and wine bottles. That's it. Otherwise, keep me out of the kitchen.
It's an important job.
Very important job. But then once we were done eating, we were locked into the couch, watched the Leafs for the Red Wings. We had the college football, and then we ended the night with the World Series. It doesn't get any better than that on a Saturday. Lots of sports to follow. Again, you need multiple TVs to be able to track all this stuff, which is my spot's the perfect place. That's why he loves coming here on a Saturday. Only downfall was the 8 a.m. Sunday morning game time for my oldest. We were up at 6, dressed, out the door by 6:45 to get to the rink early. It was tough. It was a tough morning for yours truly.
The cream sodas from the night previous were sitting a little heavy there in the the gut, so to speak.
Yeah, but the great thing is you look around at all the other parents tying up the skates in the dressing room at 7 in the morning, and like you can all look at each other and you know, oh, that guy had a couple beers last night. Oh, she might have had a couple glasses of wine. You know, but you got to still do it. And then obviously Sunday night was Halloween. It was a great Halloween. For those of you with kids, it's good to get them back out. Last year was kind of odd, and I think we even had some rain, but you know, it's odd going back to people's houses and ringing doorbells. I had one boy who was dressed up as Sub-Zero from Mortal Kombat. And then the other one was a police officer, but he just really wanted to blow the whistle that came with the costume. They were so pumped about that. So much candy, like too much candy they came home with. And you know, it's all the same, like 8 or 10 little candy bars nowadays. You get them all from kind of Walmart and some sort of variety pack. Every house has the same, you know, chunk of candy. And now the candy is just sitting in the house. So I work from home. Every time I walk by the kitchen, it's like, oh, little candy bar for me. I'll take it to my office. Oh, take another one of those. Oh, take another one of those. End of the day, I had candy wrappers all over my desk. I'm like, what happened here? I'm the one eating all the candy. I mean, it is sweater weather now, fall mm-hmm. weather. Mm-hmm. I'm going to need it, man. I'm going to start packing on those pounds. But I got to ask you, what is your favorite candy bar?
Ooh, good question. Sweater weather. Yeah, it made me laugh when you said that. I really excel at this time of year. My best wardrobe is the fall winter look. best candy bar. That's a good question.
I made a list. You want me to start?
Yeah, you started off. Maybe
we had all the candy out. I'm not talking chips, okay?
No,
little bags of chips. Those don't count. Snickers.
Oh, yeah.
Right at the top. That's a mm-hmm. Hall of Fame chocolate bar. Nice and chewy, but hearty enough that you feel like you actually had something. O. Henry. Love it. Good crunch to it. Little gooey. Good one. And then a little bit off of the chocolate bar path, I love a good little bag of nibs.
Mm. Okay.
I'm a licorice guy. So you get those nibs, maybe sprinkle them in with your peanuts while you're watching the ball game at night. Perfect little mix.
Whenever I go to Green Bay, you know, we typically hit up a Walmart to get some of the snacks for the house. Always get a big bag of M&M peanuts.
Good ones. Can't do the peanuts though. They can't hand them out because of kids, but they do the M&M chocolates. Right.
Okay. Yeah. So we're doing specific to this. I think Snickers has peanuts.
I guess, but I still saw them in there.
So, I mean, well, what are we doing here, parents? Are we giving out peanuts to people?
M&Ms, I like them, yeah.
You can never go wrong with a good Mars bar. It's simple. It feels lighter. You don't have the peanut, you know, to weigh you down. It's a good on-the-go bar, if you will.
Are you a coffee crisp guy?
No, not so much.
Crispy Crunch?
Crispy Crunch is good. Crispy Crunch is good. I even dabble with Bounty. Like a little coconut? What do you mean?
Ugh. No, thank you.
Okay, well.
What about Kit Kat?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's been around forever, right? It's like, how do you knock it? It's there. I mean, you eat it, but.
Break me off a piece of that Kit Kat bar.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah. Hey, well, let us know. What's your favorite chocolate bar? What are we missing? What did we forget to mention? Maybe some of our American viewers, listeners, they have different chocolate bars that are handed out. I don't know. I don't know what goes on down there. They're probably handing out big old chocolate bars, full-length chocolate bars. We only get mini ones up here, really.
We forgot to mention Twix.
Caramel.
Yeah, I like
the Cadbury. We could go on all day.
Okay. We got to get to sports at some point here. Yeah, we got to get
some sports here. So stick around. We got our T5 coming up. We got lots of great sports to talk about after break. No more candy bar talk, I promise. All right, so stick around. We'll be right back. What a better week of football we had this Sunday. And for the game of the week, we have to pick the only one that went into overtime for our T1. The Tennessee Titans and Indianapolis Colts went to overtime, tied 31-31 after scoring two touchdowns in the final 86 seconds of regulation to set up the extra time. But it was Randy Bullock who made the 45-yard field goal with 4 minutes left in OT to give the Titans the win and move them to 6-2 on the year. Mike, this was not a perfect game, but a fun one to watch.
I think Carson Wentz could use a candy bar today.
Yes, yes.
A good game, a good divisional battle. One, I kind of felt that Indianapolis let slip away, obviously going up 14-0, allowing Tennessee back into the game. And given the result and what we know today with Derrick Henry and right. his foot surgery that's required and a 6 to 10 week absence for Tennessee, a win for the Colts yesterday would have, I think, put them to 500 and really kept them a in game the mix. Behind.
Yep.
Yeah. And really now they got to dig themselves out of a deeper hole. But the game itself started off well for the Colts. They were moving the ball well, holding in our Tennessee off the score sheet. And then Tennessee, you know, you allow them back in the game as divisional games happen. It's a bit of a tug of war. And then the Carson Wentz, everybody was talking about how he's not turned the ball over so much this year. I think he had only one or two interceptions going into the game. And then guess what happens? The old Carson Wentz comes back to town.
Yeah, it feels like the spotlight's just always on this guy, and mostly in a negative way. Mm-hmm. I mean, two more interceptions in the final 7 minutes, including the pick six, which really could have ended the game. It really could end. I saw that pick six, I'm like, what just happened on that TV over there where he's scrambling around in his end zone and then did a little shovel pass, pick six. I was like, that game's over. Titans got it.
That's one of the ones you look down your phone to see how bad your fantasy team's losing and then look up. You're like, oh, shit, what happened?
Yeah. But it's similar to what we've kind of said about a lot of the quarterbacks in the NFL. We talked about it with Mahomes, and they just get panicked when the rush comes to them, get the pressure, and they make these stupid mistakes. Like, he must be looking at that game footage this week and being like, what was I doing there? Like, why didn't I either just take the safety, throw it away, run off to the side? It's those ones where, you know, Rodgers, Brady, we bring those vets up. They don't make those mistakes like these younger guys do. But, I mean, Tennessee, they are a good team. They're a team that I think in the preview I wasn't too hyped up on, wasn't sure about quarterback, what's going to happen. And now they've won four in a row. You know, you talked about the injury to Henry. Julio Jones looks like he might have been hurt, banged up a little bit as well. But it was a big win, but just at what cost? I think this is a team that isn't right there to challenge for the conference title, you know, and they're not going to make a lot of noise in the playoffs. But they're a good team, a solid team, and potentially a playoff team.
Yeah, and A.J. Brown, you know, 10 catches yesterday, 155 yards and a touchdown, finally has a decent game. He's, you know, started off the season hurt, and then he's had some issues there. But a full-blown great performance from him yesterday. But yes, now knowing what we know with Derrick Henry, I think that is obviously a massive blow to their chances in the conference because he is the best running back in football. And losing him for 6 to 10 weeks, he is not somebody you replace easily.
I think they signed Adrian Peterson today.
They did. They did. So we get the future Hall of Famer, 36 years old.
You know he's still jacked too.
Oh, for sure. For sure. The guy works out like a beast. So he's on the practice squad. I'm sure he'll get elevated to the, you know, to the 53-man roster and will probably play in their next game because they are a strong running team. Now Tannehill's going to have to step up, obviously, a little bit more in the pass game. They have the weapons, so it'll be interesting to see how they shift and you know, deal with this massive injury.
Yeah, this is one of those games, too. There was a lot going on. I was following a bunch of other games, too, which we'll get into in the next topic here. But it was at halftime. Indy was up 3, and I just knew It was going to overtime. Both my brother-in-law and I had the Titans to win outright. So we were keeping a close eye on the game. And I said to him, like, this game is going to be going to overtime for sure. It just felt like one of those back and forth games between two teams that maybe aren't the highest profile. I knew it was going to go to overtime. The Titans are good, as I mentioned, but they just don't have that ability to really bury teams. You know, they get up by a touchdown. It's not like, all right, let's quick stop them three out and then go right back on the offense. They just keep letting teams back in. And that's why I just, my confidence level in these guys, I mean, especially without Henry now, it's just not where it needs to be, where I think they're an elite team in the league.
Yeah, and you see what they did the week previous going against Kansas City, and, you know, whatever Kansas City is going to be, regardless, to shut down Patrick Mahomes is no easy task.
No.
So you have that performance. It's inconsistent week by week, but look, I mean, they, what are they now, 5-2, 6-2?
6-2.
6-2, so they have a cushion now. That's the thing. They've built up a bigger cushion now. I think it's three games over Indy. So, and you know, Jacksonville and Houston aren't going to be knocking at that door anytime soon. So if they can tread water here and, you know, get to 9-10 wins, that should probably be enough to win the division.
The NFL had themselves a week of football with interesting matchups and upsets that are changing the landscape of the playoff picture, and that is where our T2 is. The Cardinals are no longer undefeated after dropping the Thursday nighter to Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, while the Bengals went back to being the Bungles, losing to the Jets, and Brady was looking over the age of 43 against the Saints, but the Cowboys showed the guts they have to win without their starting quarterback. Mike, did you love this week of football?
I did. And I think I touched on the fact that, you know, with my team not playing on Sunday, it just feels different. Obviously, I won't spend too much time on the Thursday nighter, but a great performance by Green Bay. I think they kind of let Arizona back into it late when they didn't score in the red zone. And that got me a little nervous. But without some big weapons, a great performance, and both teams are 7-1.
I have to stop doubting the Packers. I should say I have to stop doubting Aaron Rodgers, wherever he plays in the future. I need to implement my Tom Brady rule now on Aaron Rodgers as well. And that rule is, never bet against them, especially in a primetime game. I mean, he was missing three of his four wide receivers. Didn't matter. Marched down the field anytime he wanted. Played a little bit different. I mean, the game plan had to be changed. But, you know, he manages that team and that offense so well. And then you look on the other side of the ball, Kyler Murray, people just talking about him nonstop, how great he's been. MVP candidate, undefeated team. They could be Super Bowl candidates, all that stuff. And he just looked kind of normal. He was being stopped every which way, two interceptions. The contrast between the two quarterbacks and the way they actually played when they met each other, it made it very interesting to see.
And it's going to be tough for you to hold to that standard of not doubting Rodgers, because as I've said time and time again, he ain't going anywhere, man. So he's going to be in green and gold, and you're going to have to hold yourself to that. The only other point I'll make on that game, I'm very impressed by the Green Bay defense. Defensive coordinator was out with COVID and on the COVID list, and a number of starters are still out for that team. But week after week, they seem to get the job done. So it's very promising, but I'm not really ready to get too excited yet. In terms of Cincinnati, just unbelievably poor, blown opportunity against the Jets. You go into Baltimore, you do what you did to the Ravens, and then you go to the Jets and you lay an friggin' egg.
Oh.
Terrible game.
Awful. So disappointing. I mean, they were my survivor pick. And by kickoff, they were minus 11 favorites. I mean, against the Jets, who didn't even have their starting quarterback in the lineup. They had Mike White, who threw for 405 yards. Excuse me? Who the hell is this guy? I was shocked watching this game, and I just was waiting for Burrow and Chase to get back together like they've been the previous 2-3 weeks and just start scoring touchdowns, no problem, and run up the score, nothing. I was so disappointed. after I bought in last week with how good they looked. I was like, this team maybe is legit. You know, a team where, as we just mentioned with the Titans, I don't have that feeling with the Titans. I was starting to get that feeling with the Bengals. And now that's completely gone. It's out the window, and I don't even know who they are. I mean, every time they had the lead, I was just like, turn it on now, let's go. And then nothing. They'd blow it up, or they couldn't get the offense going. The defense was giving up scoring chances nonstop to the Jets. It was so disappointing to see. And then look at this one. He threw 405 yards. The last Jets quarterback to throw over 400 yards, Vinny Testaverde, on Christmas Day in 2000. So disappointing for the Bengals.
Big Vinny. Yeah, and not to defend them. I think, you know, they are still relatively a young team. Burrow, obviously, only his second year. Ja'Marr Chase, first year. They've had so many problems losing games over the years, but they have been winning well this year. And doing what they did this week, they have to respond this week. And they got a big one against the Browns at home. And the Browns have really fallen off over the past couple of weeks. They got to win. If they can beat the Browns and kind of get this train back on the tracks, maybe we look back in a couple of weeks from now and this Jets game is just a little blip in the road. But they got to respond.
Yeah, we'll see how they respond. I mean, that's what makes these teams, you know, good teams good, is they're going to respond after bad losses. We saw it with Buffalo this year. We saw it with Green Bay, and look how they've gone. The other team I do want to talk about is the Cowboys. And man, I love the Cowboys. Not a Cowboys fan, but really like this team. Obviously my Super Bowl pick. They were -1.5 favorites at the start of the week. That's when it opened up. By the time we got to Friday, word started to spread that Dak Prescott was not going to play. It moved all the way to +4 on the Cowboys side before kickoff is where it ended up. It was the right move not to play Prescott. I think they've already won the NFC East. That's how bad the division is. But I'm sure there were some fantasy owners out there that were like, what do I do? It's the late game. Do I put him in my lineup? Do I go find another quarterback? I mean, I know this is gambling stuff, really, but it needs to be addressed by the league on what do they do in these situations. Do you have a cutoff date of when you have to say a player's playing or not? Because you can't wait till 8 o'clock on Sunday night. It really messes with gamblers, fantasy football players, which, let's be honest, are a big portion of your viewership.
It is, but I'm sure Mike McCarthy couldn't give two you-know-whats about people's fantasy lineups. It's about winning football games.
You don't think there was people flipping out? Our good buddy, John, he had Dak. He had to make the decision Sunday morning. What am I going to do?
Yeah. No, like I said, you know, you hit the nail on the head. It's part of it, and it is something, but I'm sure there's a lot of coaches sitting there being like, I could give any less of a shit about these guys' fantasy lineups. But no, it's a good point, right? And it's something that, especially when they are playing the late game or a Monday night, or even worse,
right,
where, you know, if your quarterback's not playing or a significant player, then you're pretty much scraping by the waiver wire to find something. But the only other thing I wanted to mention, the NFL, the Rams picked up Von Miller today on Monday for a second and third rounder in 2022. I know he's been hurt, but once he gets healthy, adding Von Miller to the Rams defense, that's a pretty good addition for them. Yeah. A Super Bowl winner.
It'll be good. Just going back to the Cowboys, I wrote this down, Mike, while I was watching it. I was like, I got to ask Mike this on the pod. Did you see quarterback for the Cowboys this week was Cooper Rush? Okay. I don't know if you guys have heard about him. I think he had like 5 throws in the NFL before Sunday, and they came back in 2017. I think he went to Central Michigan, only scholarship offer he had, you know, football guy, but he's just been a loyal soldier for the Cowboys. Gets into play and start for the Dallas Cowboys, you know, the America's team, all that. Wins the game, great touchdown at the end. His family, they kept showing them on TV. His dad's in tears in the stands. Now, his dad and his family were wearing Cooper Rush number 10 Cowboys jerseys in the stands on the road. My question for you is, if your son was playing in the pros, football, hockey, baseball, whatever it is, do you wear his jersey to the game?
500%.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You wouldn't? If your son makes the NHL, okay, let's say one of your boys goes to the show and he says, Dad, I've been called up. First game's in Boston. Here's a couple tickets for you and mom and a jersey, Starkman on the back. You're not going to put his jersey on going to Boston? What kind of father are you?
I guess I just never thought about it. And I was like, is it weird to wear your son's jersey?
You're asking the guy who doesn't have kids, man. I should be asking you that question. But yes, I mean, I definitely would. I mean, it's your son. You're part of it. Now, look, if he's not playing for the Packers, if it's like the Vikings or Bears, I'm probably not doing it. I'd be like, good luck. But but no, I for sure. For sure.
Does Peyton Manning's dad wear a Manning jersey when he was playing? I don't know.
He wears the split one, the half Colts, half Giants one.
Yeah. That's right. When they play each other. Now, break out the school bands. It was a hell of a weekend to be a college student with great games, and it's the best weekend of the year for college students. Do you know why, Mike?
I don't.
Halloween. There's nothing better than being on a college campus during Halloween. The parties are insane. The costumes are wild. And these folks had a great weekend when you sprinkle in college football as well. The top teams took care of business as Georgia, Cincinnati, and Oklahoma all won, and Bama had the week off. But the real battle happened in the lovely state of Michigan as the Wolverines went to East Lansing and lost a heartbreaker to Michigan State. Mike, tell us, how will this affect the Big Ten?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens now. I think really in the east side of things, on the East Division, it's really going to be between Ohio State and Michigan State now. Michigan State, looking ahead at their schedule, they're going to play Ohio State on November 20th. So most teams at this point now have 3 to 4 games remaining in the regular season, and then we'll start getting into these conference championships and everything. So right now, Ohio State plays Nebraska and Purdue the next 2 weeks, and then Michigan State on November 20th. Michigan State has Purdue as well and Maryland. So you like both of those teams to go 2-0, and that sets up a big battle between themselves on November 20th. Michigan State finishes with Penn State on November 27th, and then Ohio State has to play Michigan. So if Michigan's going to get themselves back into the conversation here over the next 2-3 weeks, they play Ohio State on November 27th.
That's the statement game.
100%. So just looking at things, I really think it's going to come down to that Michigan State, Ohio State game on November 20th. And right now, I think the odds still tilt towards the Buckeyes. But look, Michigan State, they're riding high. They've had a great season. The big fourth quarter against the Wolverines, winning that game, I could see them easily beating Ohio State and putting themselves in that mix for the top four. Because that's the thing. Now, the other thing here is, right, as we said time and time again, with Georgia, Cincinnati, Bama, Oklahoma, they got to keep winning, but they have to keep winning convincingly. And all of them did that this weekend.
You know what? This is why I love college football. Not only just the playoff aspect of it, but, you know, they're kids. They're kids who make mistakes.
Yep.
They give up points. I mean, Michigan was up 10-0 early and quick. I was watching it. I was like, this is great. I'm on Michigan. They're going to roll them. I honestly liked Michigan. I've been talking about it, sneaking into the top four and making the playoffs. I thought this would be a big statement win for them. I had to jump out, go to the rink, came back. I'm like, what's going on here? Michigan State's now back in it. What the hell happened? It looked like they were playing outstanding defense and everything was going to go well. And then in the fourth quarter, Michigan State outscores them 15-3. In the fourth quarter, that can't happen if you're a serious contender for the national championship. Wolverine fans must just be wondering what was going on here. We had this one and we let it slip away. Although I do like McNamara, the Michigan QB. I honestly thought he was going to drive them down at the end of the fourth quarter there, get the touchdown, walk out of there as a hero. And then it was just an interception, heartbreaking, right in midfield. I mean, their dreams are just kind of crushed. I don't have the same kind of feeling that you do. I think it might be over for Michigan now. Too big of a loss. And I really believe that Ohio State might be the top team in that conference.
Yeah. And sorry, when I say Michigan, I mean Michigan State should be. I really think that November 20th game with Michigan State and Ohio State will be the decider. I just meant if Michigan can kind of hang around, get some wins over the next couple weeks, then they have to play Ohio State. But I don't see them beating Ohio State.
They need too much other stuff to happen.
Right.
Michigan now needs too much other stuff to happen.
For sure.
They need Cincinnati, Oklahoma, Michigan State to lose, and then them for them to beat Ohio State. I really do think it's done for Michigan.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Cincinnati, their final four games, Tulsa, South Florida, SMU, East Carolina. I mean, they beat those teams convincingly. They should have a top four spot.
Yeah. And Ohio State, I mean, they won by 9 over Penn State. You know, they're more than in the mix. Mm-hmm. That was an early loss. I think they got a chance. Another team I like, oddly enough, beating Ohio State, Oregon. They had a big win over Colorado. You know what their only problem is? They're the only ranked team out of the Pac-12. The Pac-12, it's just a dead conference nowadays. There's no competition there.
Yeah, that's the problem, right? And it's those strength of victories. And after they beat Ohio State, they lose, they drop down. And now you really have to beat teams to put yourself ahead. But I just, where we are today with the six teams ahead of Oregon, barring anything crazy, I don't see Oregon getting past those top six. I just don't. The only other two things I want to mention, what a fall from grace for Iowa.
Yeah.
Second rank, lose a couple games, lose to Purdue, lose to Wisconsin 27-7 on Saturday. You're Wisconsin Badgers. I was saying that like collectively, like I'm talking to fans here. It's just myself. 4 wins in a row for the Badgers, putting themselves back in the hunt in the West Side division with Minnesota and the Big Ten. So maybe we'll get to the Big Ten championship against Ohio State. But and then just a quick shout out to Mr. Nebeta's boys, the Auburn Tigers, beating Ole Miss and knocking Ole Miss down a couple pegs.
I wanted to call out Wake Forest, which in my mind, a basketball school. It's a fun game we got to play one day too. Name a school. Is it a football school or basketball school? Wake Forest, my mind, basketball school. They won again. They're always covering for me. For some reason, their spreads are nice and easy. You can get a good cover with them. They're now in the top 10 with an 8-0 record. Now, they're not going to make any noise, make the playoffs, but it's a nice little story about a basketball school making some noise on the football side.
100%. And I have a feeling, Stark, they may pop up a little later in our conversation.
Ooh, that's what the kids call a teaser. Now, we are recording on Monday night, and our T4 might look a little different by the time you're hearing us. But hey, just enjoy it and don't send us any hate mail, okay? Our T4, the Braves, won 2 of 3 at home over the weekend to hold on to a 3-2 series lead in the World Series over the Houston Astros, who were on the brink of elimination on Sunday night and were down 4-0 after an Adam Duvall grand slam in the first inning. But those Astros, they rallied back to win it 9-5 and take the series back home with their chance to win the World Series if they can win both games at home Tuesday and Wednesday night. Now, again, I mentioned, if you're listening to this in the future, I'm talking to you in the future up there. Maybe, Stark, you're listening to this as well. You're going to think I know something when I say this. But that was the Braves' chance to win on Sunday night. That was it. That was the one they needed. Don't let it go back to Houston. The Astros now have the momentum coming back from being down 4-0. They love playing at home, even without the garbage cans. They're still very good there. I think they win game 6 and they force a game 7.
We were talking last night and I said to you, and this is just to let the listeners into our very highbrow conversations that we have.
A peek behind the curtains.
Yeah, yeah. And I said, I really hope the Braves win for 2 reasons. One, because it would be nice to see, but mainly so we could talk about the World Series champions on the podcast on Monday. And it was looking good after the first inning. And then Freddie Freeman came back, you know, put them ahead 5-4. And then it was just, it just kind of fell off from there. But yeah, I mean, momentum, I guess, somewhat shifted. The bullpen's been so good for Atlanta through the first four games, and then they had the bullpen game yesterday, and it just, you know, it didn't, they ran out of gas. But, you know, we go back to Houston Tuesday and Wednesday possibly, and we'll see where we're at. But good series so far.
I think Atlanta made the decision in game five that, hey, we're going to throw bullpen guys. We're going to use them very quickly, you know, two innings max. We're not going to throw out anyone that's going to be very important to us. Maybe we could squeak out the win this way. Otherwise, we'll keep everyone fresh and get into game six in Houston. They seem to maybe have some confidence doing that. They threw out five different pitchers. They gave up 12 hits. But man, the Astros are just so streaky offensive. They just need to get the ball rolling. I feel like that game five was it. Carrera was moved up the lineup in game five while Bregman was dropped down to seventh, and it paid off for manager Dusty Baker as Carrera had three hits, two RBIs in the game. Even Bregman with a clutch hit and RBI hitting from lower in the lineup. It was a risky move to change your lineup for game five, but losing two in a row there, they need to make a change. And you know what? Credit to Baker, who probably had to have a conversation with the analytics team and say, you know what? I'm doing this based off of gut. I've been around the game long enough. I'm making the switch, and our lineup's going to be better for it. And it was.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in an elimination game, you know, you got to try something to get the ball rolling. And, you know, I think we've talked about just how good a manager Dusty Baker is, and his experience, and the plus side of that would be, you know, nice to see him get a ring. But, yeah, look, they have a plethora of options offensively, and they're using them to their advantage and got back into the series. And now we head back to Houston. We'll see where we're at.
Yeah, game six, we have Max Fried for Atlanta against Luis Garcia for Houston. A combined ERA this postseason of 13.02. You heard that right. Take note. Going to be a lot of runs in game six. Now, Saturday night at my house is for Leafs hockey. Everything else stops to watch the game, so it has to be our T5. The Leafs had a 2-1 week after getting their doors blown off against the Canes on Monday night against former goalie Frederik Andersen. They snuck by both the Blackhawks and the Red Wings. I know it's the Hawks and Wings, but wins are wins, and that's all the boys in blue need right now. Now, treading water, to me, it's very important in professional sports. And what I mean by that is you're not always going to play top-notch, your best game, especially when you're playing 82 games in a season. But what you need to do is get wins ugly when you're not really grooving. And that's what the Leafs tended to do this week, especially after a really bad week 2 weeks ago. Matthews, Marner, Tavares, they're too good of players to be in slumps all season long. The breakout's going to come. They just need to find ways to get wins till they find it. Mrazek, you know, you put him in net. He looked good. You know, he'll be a nice little piece, get some wins. But really, Campbell's the number one goalie. There's no doubt about it. He's got to be the key moving forward. I think this Leafs team needed those dirty wins. Now they can start moving forward. They got a tough schedule coming up. They're going to play some tough teams that they haven't played in maybe 2 years even. You're going to play the Bruins. You're going to play the Lightnings. Those are going to be teams that you're going to battle all season long for positioning and potentially have to battle them in the playoffs. And now's the time. Matthews, Marner, get it going because they're going to need it.
And just to, you know, we don't show video here in our podcast, but just so everybody knows, Stark is a happier disposition this week. He's got a smile on his face. There's a pinkish hue in his cheek. Things are turning around, and he's in a much more jovial mood this yes. week after a couple wins back to back. As we said, it's early, but it's good. And to your point, regardless of the sport, over a long season, you need to win games, not just by overpowering teams with your skills, but winning dirty and winning ugly, and not so much dirty, but you know what I mean? Getting those ugly wins, finding different ways to win, using different combinations. And over the course of the season, you know, you find something that just may work and ride it out. So it's good they're back on and a couple wins, and people people are a little happier today.
Yeah, and you saw that on Wednesday night. They beat the Chicago Blackhawks coming back from being down 2-0. Apparently, there were some words said by Simmons in the dressing room to get the guys going, and they win in overtime on a Nylander goal. And Nylander and Matthews are jumping up and down like it was the biggest win of their career. That shows they matter, that they care. They want to win. They want to be winners. And it's not just about points night all the time. And that's something that these guys have kind of been, you know, labeled as points guys sometimes and being looking out for themselves, obviously, with their contracts, but they want to win. And speaking of contracts, you know, Morgan Rielly, he signed an 8-year, $60 million deal. It's good for both sides. The Leafs lock up their number one D-man for the next 8 years. In his prime ages, he's 27, I think, right now. So he's got a lot of good years left, and they're going to get that chunk of it. The numbers somewhat fit. I mean, it's less than what he would have got if he was on the open market, but he gets that 8th year to stay in Toronto. He lives here now. He's a Torontonian. He loves being here. He's got a chance of setting the most games played by a Maple Leaf ever. George Armstrong has that. I think he's going to pass that no problem as long as he's healthy. He's got the no trade clause, so he ain't going anywhere. He's going to be a Leaf for a long time, and he's going to be with this core. He can take it to the next level. When he's all done, he's got 30 more years he can spend in Toronto being part of the Leafs alumni, making millions, playing all the great golf courses in the GTA. It's a great deal. I don't know why anyone who's successful as a player and playing for Leafs wouldn't want to stay here and be part of this team.
A great player and somebody that you can really build around, and he's proven it time and time again. The question I had for you, because I think his name was heavily in the conversation when the captaincy was named. Is he a candidate, potential future captain?
Yeah, I think he is. I think he's a leader in the room, and I think he would be good at that, but I really don't think it's that important to him. I think it's probably more important to a guy like Matthews. But I think Riley's a leader in that room anyway. I mean, anyone that watched the documentary, they had a leadership meeting. And, you know, Morgan was in there. Tavares was in there. Muzzin was in there. Thornton at the time was in there. There was no Matthews in that meeting room. So I think Rielly's a leader. And a letter doesn't necessarily make you the most important person or the leader, most important leader. I just mentioned against Chicago, fourth line player Wayne Simmons was the one that stood up and said, let's shake it off and get it right here. But I really like Morgan Rielly. Oddly enough, it's his jersey I wear when we go to games.
Oh.
So I'm not his dad, so I can wear it, I guess.
If you were his dad, I don't think we'd be doing this podcast.
No.
You'd be golfing with him and going everywhere important.
Yeah, I'd be sending in my retirement papers after that deal. Around the league, just a couple things I did want to mention too. You know, despite Joel Quenneville having to step down in Florida, they've not lost a regulation game. The Panthers look great. Carolina undefeated as well. So those are the only two teams that haven't lost a game in regulation. It's nice to see. I think they're both really strong teams, and they're going to be serious playoff contenders. Then you look at the Buffalo Sabres, 5-2-1, a hot start. Good for them. They're doing it without their best player. What's going to happen with Jack Eichel? Who knows? But you know what? Those Sabre players don't care. It looks like they've moved on. While in Montreal, it's a dumpster fire right now. They're 2-8. They just sent down Calder Trophy hopeful Cole Caulfield down to the minors to find his game. He's only got one goal this season. The NHL is moving and shaking right now. Teams are going up and teams are going down.
Yeah, it's nice to see three Canadian teams right up there in the thick of things. I mean, they're all in the Western Conference, but Calgary 6-1-1, the Jets 4-2-2, and getting past their COVID issues, and a real deep team. And Edmonton, I mean, McDavid flying high, 6-1 there. So, and then the one team I kind of pointed out to, or two of them I just wanted to briefly touch on, the Rangers, team that's kind of been in rebuild mode the past few years, off to a good start, winning 6 of their first 9. And the Red Wings are kind of flirting around 500. So they, the Yzerman project there, I guess, is starting to bear fruit.
Yeah. You mentioned the Oilers. If you are a hockey fan, a serious hockey fan, and you're listening to this, you got to start staying up a little bit late, but you got to watch this Oilers team, man. Unbelievable. So fast and great with the puck. It's awesome to see McDavid, Draisaitl, and you throw in Hyman with those guys. They're good. Now, I did want to just briefly touch on the Blackhawks. Obviously, it was a very big story in the sports world over the last week and a bit. We're not going to go into all the details. I agree that all parties involved that did not help Kyle Beach should be out of the game. There's no question about that. And for the most part, it's been done and been handled correctly. I applaud the league for not letting it linger and making a swift decision on how to handle it. It does not make up for all the bad things and how it was screwed up 11 years ago. But I mean, at least they're heading in the right direction and the league made some right choices. So good on them for that. Now into week 8 in our NFL picks, we tied. And I'm going to take that as a positive. All right. I've been getting my butt spanked by Mike here the last 4 weeks. So I'll take a tie. It's that momentum that maybe I need to start moving in the right direction. This past week, Mike had Green Bay in the Thursday night checkmark. He had Tennessee, the overtime miracle there we talked about, checkmark. I had the New England Patriots, and then I had the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday night, both winners for me. So we are 2-2. The season series is led by Mike at 21-11. Still a lot for me to get back into this. But hey, I believe in myself. Mike's going to lead it off, but let's first take a peek at the games. We got the Thursday nighter, the Indianapolis Colts -10.5 against the Jets. Sunday at 1 o'clock, we got the Cincinnati Bengals -2.5 against the Cleveland Browns. Sunday at 4, the Arizona Cardinals are -2.5 point favorites heading into San Francisco. And then the Sunday nighter, we got the Los Angeles Rams -7.5 versus the Tennessee Titans. Mike, you're picking first. Where do you like?
I'm not ready to totally jump off their wagon just yet. I'm going Cincinnati to respond after a tough loss to the Jets and beat the Browns. Cincinnati -2.5.
I like it. I like it. Yeah, that'll be a tough one. It's going to be an interesting game. It's going to be a gritty game too. I'm going to go to the West Coast. The Cardinals got thumped there by your Packers on Thursday night. So they got a little bit extra rest, you know, a little bit more time to plan. They're going into San Francisco. That undefeated thing is gone. It's off their shoulders. Drink your champagne, Miami Dolphins. They're going to bounce back now with a big game. I'll take the Arizona Cardinals -2.5.
I'm going with the Sunday nighter. The Rams put up 38 points in 3 quarters against Houston and gave up 22, apparently, in the fourth quarter. They're not happy about that, Stark. I know that. And with the injury of Derrick Henry, I just don't know what this Titans team is going to be. I'm taking the Rams -7.5.
Good. So I got the Thursday nighter, and this number scares me. 10.5, not a football number, for those of you that know, which means they're going to have to beat them pretty much by 2 touchdowns. And I just don't trust Carson Wentz. He's going to fumble in the end zone. But do I take the Jets? Give me the Jets +10.5. I'm in such a hole. I got to make magic happen here. So I got the Jets +10.5. Well, Mike's got the Colts. Mike's got Cincinnati -2.5 against Cleveland. I got Arizona -2.5 against San Fran. And Mike's got the Rams -7.5 on the Sunday nighter against the Titans. We'll see how this goes. We'll see how this goes, but I need a big week. That wraps up our NFL picks and our T5. We got a short break, and then when we come back, we will play Pick'em. It's futures time, and that means playing Pick'em. All the names are on the board, Mike. You just have to pick the winner. And we'll start it off. The NHL season is young, but an old guy named Alex Ovechkin is leading the league with 9 goals. But who are you picking to win the Rocket Richard Trophy for most goals at the end of the season?
Alex Ovechkin. Big surprise there. 9 goals in 8 games, 5th all time. Likely is going to be passing Brett Hall maybe this week. He's closing on Jaromir Jagr for 3rd overall. And then he's just got Gordie Howe and Wayne Gretzky ahead of him. OV is the Rocket Richard winner.
I don't think Alex can hang on the whole way. He'll get a bunch of goals, but I don't think he's going to lead it. He's going to slow down a little bit at some point. They'll figure him out a bit on the power play. We'll see how that goes. I'm picking someone at some value. I'm picking Alexander Barkov of the Florida Panthers. He has 5 goals this year, but the last time he played a full 82-game season 3 years ago, he scored 35. His team is good. Jonathan Huberdeau is setting him up every single night. Beautiful overtime goal on Friday night, I believe it was. I think he'll get over 45, push to 50, and I think he can win that trophy, no problem. Number two, we've seen 5 games in the World Series so far, and the next two are obviously big ones. But who are you picking to win the World Series MVP?
If he can do something for a third time, Jorge Soler from the Atlanta Braves hits the home run in the first at bat of game one, the first player to do that in World Series history, well over 117 years, I think, of the World Series. First player to do that, hits what became the game-winning home run in game four to let Atlanta or get Atlanta the win. People remember things of the World Series, memorable moments, right? That's how you win MVPs. He has 2 already. If Atlanta can win and maybe he gets a third one, I think he puts himself heavy in that conversation. But for me, I like it. Jorge Soler.
It's tough because the Braves have not had like a standout pitcher, which usually gets a lot of consideration. And obviously you can't give it to an entire bullpen. I am leading Braves in game 7. I think it's going to go 7. I think the Braves could do it there. And I'm going to follow you, Mike. Jorge Soler. I think he can do it. That leadoff home run, you mentioned it. It's a memorable one. 100 plus years. It's never happened. What? I think it was remarkable that he did that. Something everyone's going to remember. He had the pinch hit home run in the 7th inning of game 4 because he didn't start. And it looks like he's going to start in game 6 and 7 because it's in an American League ballpark, leading off probably again. He has any more magic and the Braves win, it's his. Now it's November and we are running out of college football weekends. So who are you picking for the Heisman winner this season?
Kenneth Walker III, running back from Michigan State University. On Saturday, 23 carries, 197 yards, 5 touchdowns, 2 big touchdown runs in the fourth quarter, which really helped the Spartans take out the Wolverines. On the season, just over 1,190 rushing yards, 14 touchdowns, trying to become the first Big Ten running back to win the Heisman since my boy, Mr. Ron Dayne of the Wisconsin Badgers in 1999. Kenneth Walker III, Michigan State running back.
I'm staying in the Big Ten. I'm going CJ Stroud, QB at Ohio State. I can't give it to Bryce Young at Alabama because the team's just too good. You know, he plays the system. So what? I mean, I could be the quarterback there, I think, maybe. Stroud's playing his best football of the season after that loss to Oregon. He's thrown 22 TDs this year, only 3 interceptions. Plus, they still have a bunch of big games left where he could really make some noise. Penn State, Michigan State, Michigan. There'll be a lot of eyes on those games, and if he can perform in those, he'll put his name right at the top of the Heisman Trophy candidates. Last one, Mike. It's kind of a sad one, and that's why I was thinking about it, so I brought it up. Golf season. It's not quite done, but it's pretty much done, and there's not much going on in the PGA Tour, you know, until they really get to Hawaii and start playing the Century Tournament of Champions. I miss watching golf on the weekends. So I ask you, where's your favorite non-major PGA Tour tournament?
For me, it'd be easy to say the other two, and I'm not going to mention them just in case you do, and maybe we could talk about it. But for me, the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill in Orlando, you know, lots of tradition. Unfortunately, now that the King has passed, the winner usually would walk up the 18th hole or the 18th green to the clubhouse. He would be there waiting to greet them with a big smile and a handshake. One of Tiger's favorite tournaments. And, you know, the King of Golf, Mr. Arnold Palmer, just the classy umbrella. I think my grandfather, who is also unfortunately no longer with us, would wear the Arnie Palmer shirts all the time. So yeah. I have a great respect for Arnold Palmer and that tournament. And that for me is the big one.
I think you get like the yellow cardigan if you win too, or gold cardigan. Yeah, nice little tradition. I want to say the Waste Management because of the party scene, but a lot of the top players still don't go to that tournament. And although the 16th hole looks fun, I'm at home watching it in the cold and February weather that's brutal here in Canada. So I'm going to pick the Players Championship. It's almost a major. All the best players come out. Big prize money. TPC Sawgrass is an iconic course with one of the best holes to see disaster at, the 17th Island Green. It's the course you always play when you picked up Tiger Woods' video game. You went right to TPC Sawgrass to play it, see if you could hit the green. But really, the entire back nine is outstanding. There's trouble all over the place. And when it's coming down the stretch in a tight round on Sunday, you know something bad could happen to any of these players at any moment, and it could change the leaderboard. Plus, it's early March. I'm itching to start golfing, and I love that tournament. Kind of starts off the golf season. I'll go with the Players. Is that the other tournament you were going to mention?
Not so much the Players, because that's always kind of considered like the fifth major, and that's a good one. I just want to do something different. I didn't want to say the Tour Championship, because that's obvious and easy. It's $11 million for the winner or whatever, and the nice trophy. But Players is great. I'm surprised none of us said the Canadian Open. But no, for me, I've always had a great admiration for the Arnold Palmer Invitational and Arnold Palmer. So that's why I went with what I went with.
You ever drink Arnold Palmer's?
Oh, yes. Wait. With alcohol or without? Because both are great.
Either. They're a great refreshing drink when you're sitting poolside or lakeside.
Yeah, absolutely. I enjoy it with or without alcohol.
Look at you. Very responsible. Now, each week, Mike and I will give you our best bet of the week to help you make some cash. Last week, I had Ole Miss over Auburn. And that didn't turn out. Mike had Baylor in the Battle of Texas, and he was bang on. So, Mike, you got the tee.
Sticking in the collegiate game, as we typically do, I'm picking your boys, the Wake Forest Demon Deacons, the 10th ranked Wake Forest Demon Deacons at UNC. UNC is favored by 2.5. I'm taking Wake Forest to cover, keep the train rolling, get to 9-0. Wake Forest plus 2.5.
Love it. I'm sticking with Saturday, collegiate, November 6th. And I'm going with the school that's helped me all year long, the Covering Machines, Michigan State Spartans, now at number 5 in the country as they play Purdue, who is 5-3. MSU will stay undefeated and they'll win by more than 3. No problem. Give me Michigan State -3 to make that happen for my pick of the week. And I need it. Let's get back on rolling here. Now, we want to hear from you, so make sure to comment on the pod wherever you download your podcast and let us know your thoughts on Twitter and Instagram. We would love the feedback. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter at jabopod.thestringer.ca and find Mike and I on Twitter to see our thoughts on all the sports throughout the week. Please subscribe, like, and rate our show, and do us a favor and tell a friend to listen. And as always, clear eyes,
full hearts.
Can't lose.
Oh, yeah.